Chapter 2, Meet the Boat Halfway. I was back on set with Adam Sandler the next day. We were shooting at the Godfather Mansion for the whole week, and I was the last man to leave set and close out the day. The owner of this property had to be in the top percentage of the most powerful Americans because he had all of the production complying with his every request and demand. He had such a strong, commanding, powerful energy not to be taken lightly. And the brevity that I saw him roaming down in his Maserati and making some of the most powerful men in the industry feel uncomfortable and threatened, I realized whoever commands the energies of this house must have one hell of a story. It's a mansion positioned directly in the middle of Beverly Hills with all the luxuries and amenities one can imagine. It was like he had a magic genie along with the best real estate agent in Los Angeles team up together to make his wildest dreams come true. The landscaping was immaculate with vibrant colors, European classical art, lifelike statues, a basketball court, tennis court, pools, and multiple guest houses spread throughout the property. Security stayed on the premises full-time in rotated positions, observing everything happening on the property. After asking numerous security members who their boss was and what he did, and receiving no answer, I realized that some things I just don't need to know the answer to. Some people I am not meant to know, and some journeys I am just not supposed to take in this life form. Sometimes, as the Beatles say, it's best to just let it be, let it be, let it be, let it be. The shrooms were still in my system, teaching me truth, as well as giving me interesting, unfamiliar vibrations. In The Godfather, there was a scene where the head was cut off a horse and placed in a man's bed, and that's where we wrapped out the location before I went to Africa. I was in the heart of Hollywood, in a location where powerful people created a dark, powerful scene in a dark, powerful movie. I continue questioning, why am I being attracted to the darkness when I try my best to think conscious thoughts of the opposite? While being the last man out of the crew on the property, I began to reflect on my trip I'd be taking to Egypt. Just a few months prior, I was sitting in the service of Agape, where it was announced to sign up for the trip to Ancient Kemet with my spiritual mentors, Michael Beckwith and Keely Beckwith and Cheryl Ward. I had always wanted to develop a better bond with Michael Beckwith as my journey to optimism began with the movie The Secret, The Law of Attraction, and its words in the movie resonated with my soul. As the saying goes, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And my spiritual guides appeared to me when the universe deemed me ready. I wanted to go to Egypt ever since my hip-hop mentors, the Jacka, Yuck Mouth, and Mob Jr. introduced me to Infodishi, Sai Netter, and Egyptian culture through YouTube. I wasn't the biggest history nerd as a child, as I seemed to have an attitude of, why should I care? And what's that got to do with me? And what's that got to do with right now or today? That attitude of mine changed when I got more into my knowledge of self. I began to see how the game was always stays consistent and only the players change. I couldn't really afford the trip financially, but after I put up a large amount of the money, Gramps saw how much I wanted to go, and supplied the rest. In my mind, I thought it was better to go with a tour guide and a spiritual community that had an itinerary, as opposed to going with my homies who wing it and have no idea where to really go except for parties and the nightlife. Another word for agape is love, and that is exactly what I felt when I met with the group for the first time together at the airport. 80 of us arrived in Cairo, Egypt, full of excitement and ready for adventure. We had two buses, including all of our baggage we would be taking on our 14-day journey in Egypt. The first place we visited after we got settled in was the Giza Pyramids. As soon as they were in plain sight, our tour guides exclaimed, "This is one of the seven wonders of the world, and one of the only things that time fears." Built over 35 centuries ago, the purpose of the pyramids was to preserve the bodies and treasures of the righteous in the middle of the desert plateau, under the light of the sun. We stood outside the pyramids and were taught history lessons along with some meditation and stretching exercises. After staring at the pyramids, it was difficult to believe that such a high engineering architectural job was completed by slaves. There is such a powerful presence that emanates from the pyramids and took a deep level of understanding of spirituality to construct a work of art. Our group leader, Michael Beckwith, then said we can go inside the pyramid, so our group journey into the infinite. We walked inside the pyramid with our select group at a time when no one else was allowed to enter. There was a dog outside the pyramid before we walked in, which acted as a gatekeeper for our group experience. It barked over and over again, showing its teeth until it eventually tried it off. At any point, we could have gotten scared of the dog, or the unknown, and went back to the bus. But we kept walking into this historical landmark. We walked inside the pyramid and started going down a tiny bit. It was one of the last places anyone with claustrophobia would want to be. All we could see was the person walking in front of us and a flickering light that Michael Beckwith had in the front of the line. The cave was filled with hieroglyphs and written records on the walls of the pyramid. How it is still standing and hasn't crumbled puzzled us all. Some of us in the group started panicking because we had no idea where we were walking into, no idea what creatures or entities were living in there, or what waited around the corner in the darkness. As we continued to walk down, we ran out of walking space and were forced to crawl on hands and knees to get to the bottom corridor. While sliding on our belly on the floor of the temple, we crawled down 300 feet, which was nearly about the size of a football field, down an angle to get to the sacred space. Although we were all drenched in sweat and covered in glorified dirt, we all knew that we were together with the intention of love. After we made it into this corridor of the pyramid, we all held hands and prayed gratitude to our ancestors. We fell into the place of appreciation and just said, thank you. A connection was made and the loving vibe felt similar to when I was talking to my grandmother on psychedelics. It was a comforting vibe saying everything was going to be what it will be. We followed each other out of the bottom corridor in the same way we came in and continued to ascend to the king's chamber of the pyramid. It felt like a marathon getting to the king's chamber and everyone was dripping a sweat. I was surprised that the elders made it up there as my roommate was tired and he played for the NFL's New Orleans Saints. If a football defensive back grew tired, I already know how auntie over 50 and grandpa were doing up and down all those stairs. Seeing them make it up those stairs gave all of us more willpower, determination, and desire to complete the journey, and it led us right to the heart of the pyramid. At that moment, I remember the first time I lost my virginity. The burial chamber consisted of an empty tomb with smooth, immaculate walls and a polished ceiling. The floor seemed to be made of blocks of granite that could be about 50 tons per block. We were told by our guides that the Egyptians designed the chamber to withstand tons of pressure of the pyramid by building 5 low roof chambers that are covered by the blocks of stone, helping contain the room from crumbling inward. The lights went off in the king's chamber, and I could not see the person next to me. It was dark, but warm and comforting, like the womb of a mother who has yet to deliver her baby. We were told in the darkness that tombs were built as the home for eternity, and they had to be more durable than the palaces to withstand the test of time. As light comes from the darkness, so does darkness come from light. And just as those words were spoken, the light came back to illuminate the room. We traveled back down the winding stairs of the pyramid, outside into the sunlight, and were bombarded by Egyptian merchants eager to sell us their products. As I walked out, a random man tied a turban wrap around my head while placing a scarab around my neck. I had no idea what a scarab was, but as I was searching for light and meaning, I soon discovered the great significance of this bug. The scarab digs through the darkness for quite a while to get back to the surface, but once it gets to the light, it stays in the light. It symbolizes transcendence and rebirth as it comes to being every day. The purpose of the scarab is to recycle through filth. It eats the waste of other animals and improves the agriculture of the land, making everything around it better while doing so. It digs while on the ground and rolls its dung into a perfect sphere. Inside the sphere, it lays eggs, then buries into the ground and fertilizes. It comes into being every day, and there are no days off for the scarab, like it's no days off for the sun. They are small and, in most cases, overlooked. But a scarab not coming to work would be like custodians taking the week off. They perform an essential duty, often overlooked, yet valuable beyond measure. He said, "For you, my friend, $5. I reached in my pocket and gave him what he needed as we went to ride our camels to the Solar Boat Museum in the Sphinx. It was like I had nonverbal communication with the camel, and even though he smelled funny and had flies all around him, there was a love that came from the camel, like meeting your dog after a long day of work. After taking pictures in front of the Sphinx and asking questions about why barbarians used it as military target practice, our group went to satisfy our stomachs with a meal down the street. The Sphinx was in the shape of a lion's body with a high priest head. It symbolizes that we must master animal nature while at the same time rising to our highest spiritual nature, like priests or priestesses. As we sat down with the Sphinx in the background, my higher self told me to only eat vegetables or stay on the plant path. However, since it was 80 of us wanted to eat at the same time, I went against my higher self and picked up the first plate of food that came my way with chicken, beef, and lamb. As I cleared the plate and licked my fingers afterward, I began to receive weird noises from my stomach. The bus ride back to the hotel was miserable, filled with interesting noises and offensive smells. I rushed to my room as quickly as I possibly could and spent the next 6 hours on the toilet praying to the porcelain. I learned a lesson in that moment about the food I decided to put into my body pyramid. Everything is either life-giving or life-threatening. Everything is either life-giving or life-threatening. My roommate asked, "You alright, bruh? Sounds like you about to die." I never heard anyone make that kind of noise that you're making. I told him to call the doctor and get someone to help. The Egyptian doctors came in my room and gave me a shot in my buttocks with some Arabic drugs I couldn't even read. Just as I was starting to feel better and lie down in bed, my roommate informed me that the bus was going to leave for the airport to Aswan in 30 minutes. It took everything I had in me to get out of bed and pack my things and get to the airport. My body wanted me to just stay in the bed and heal. The doctors even recommended it. I suggested it to my group, claiming I had insurance, and my roommate expressed he'd feel better if I came on the journey because there were mothers and doctors in our group that had my best interest at heart, while leaving me at the hotel was leaving me with the unknown. I mustered up the strength and made it to the airport. Different group members came to my aid when they saw me struggling and offered to give me support, love, charcoal, drugs, vitamins, minerals, and any other remedy they use for sickness. I made it to my seat without vomiting and fell asleep on the plane, waking up a few hours away from Cairo. I awoke in a foreign land with replenished energy. I walked sluggishly behind the rest of the group into the magnificent Temple of Ramses II. A random voice from the distance shouted, "My cousin, my cousin!" And numerous Egyptian temple trustees ran to greet me with open arms. They showed me writings on the wall and pointed out many symbols of power and truth. We saw pictures of the Nesubiti, or the king, kings unifying both lower and higher Egypt. Some kings have a hawk or falcon attached behind them. When connected to nature, we learned that the falcon, hawk, and the eagle fly higher than any other bird. They also have an extra layer of skin over their eyes so they can look directly into the sunlight like no other creature on earth can. There is no rivalry to this bird in the sky, and it can spot a mouse from a leaf while hovering at least a mile in the sky. Even air pilots imitate falcons to calculate the speed of light and how to fly in the wind. When they perch, they set up their foundation and nest on the highest tree in the sky. I got excited and took a picture by one of the statues after learning the symbolism and ancient meanings behind it. One of the trustees even let me take pictures holding the golden key to the building. I gained a boost of energy from our temple run that day. We left the Temple of Ramses and went to the Nubian Museum that had many interesting historical items and knowledge. What stood out the most to me was the picture of a man putting a spear through a crocodile. When I asked what it symbolized, the guy replied, "The crocodile or sobek symbolized time, and the crocodile will only bother you if you are out of balance with time or in lower nature." The man depicted with the spear is the hero, or you, killing your animal nature to ascend to your highest self and master time. The next lesson learned concerned matters of the heart. In a picture of a scale holding a heart weighing less than the feather on the opposite side, the symbolism expressed the necessity to release all burdens that weigh down the heart. Our hearts are to be light and free, open to give and receive light and love. Many artifacts were dated before 2500 BC, and they were sculpted or painted to timelessness and perfection. We exited the museum and went to our floating hotel for the next few nights as we sailed down the Nile River. The Nile River is said to be the spine that brings all of the other chakras or land territories of Egypt together, the life force. We started north at the top of the spine by the Mediterranean Sea and traveled down the river. It was easy to connect how abundant the ancient people of the land were. When the unclouded sun was shining every day and the Nile Delta offered the perfect environment for any seed to grow, the floodwaters of the Nile provided the means for growing a wide variety of grains, vegetables, and fruits along with wheat and barley used to make beer and bread. After the crops were harvested, the same fields were used as grazing areas for herds of cattle, camels, and other animals, serving as sources of meat and dairy products on the land, proving the resourcefulness of the people. The resourceful culture finds it disrespectful to waste. The people were really in touch with the three domains of life. They understood that the mineral, plant, and animal/human domain were all in relation to one another. The land provided a wide variety of minerals, including multiple types of stones, herbs, salts, and metals such as gold and copper. The variety of plants that grew and were cultivated could be used for purposes including food, clothing, and shelter. The fertile river was the source of seafood and the Egyptian fishing industry. The location of the territory was perfect for protection against barbarians who made hostile attacks on the environment. When everything is in oneness, peace is throughout the land, and if one thing is out of alignment, the whole region feels the turmoil. While floating down the Nile, we visited the Temple of Philae, which symbolizes love, music, and dance, the Temple of Horus, which symbolizes power, clarity, and the falcon, and the colossal statues in the Temple of Karnak. I realized how blessed I was after I ate a delicious buffet with clean water on the ship, and then saw a hungry Egyptian boy with holes in his clothes on the street looking at me in amazement, his eyes asking, "How do I make it on the boat?" I learned the true definition of meeting the boat halfway on the Nile. On our yacht, on the way to the Temple of Sobek, the crocodile god, a smaller rowboat came in the direction of the yacht. Everyone on the cruise thought we were about to run into the rowboat, but it made a sharp maneuver at the last second, anchoring his ropes into the side of our cruise ship. They yelled to us, "For you, my friend, $10. At first, we thought our cruise ship was going to be invaded or looted by thieves. I even believed I was living a scene from Captain Phillips. "You the captain now, I the captain now." But we were relieved when we realized they were just salesmen and not pirates of the Nile. We were amazed that people were willing to make a sale right in the middle of the river. One of our group members accepted the deal and bought a dashiki that the Egyptian merchant launched up as hard as he could to the deck of our ship. There was a case around the shirt with a pouch to put the money in. As our group member put the money in, he tossed the pouch down to the rowboat. The pouch didn't fall directly in the boat, however, so we thought that the merchants missed out on the transaction. To our surprise, they cut the string that anchored them to the boat, yelled, "Thank you," and rowed toward the money pouch. I was amazed by the work ethic and the hustle these men showed in the middle of the Nile. They truly met the boat halfway and went the full distance to make a sail to feed their family. We left the cruise ship and proceeded to the Valley of the Kings. At this point, I was feeling back to my normal state with no signs of sickness at all. I even stopped taking the Arabic medication. We left the bus and took the moon rail to the resting area that holds at least 64 of Egypt's pharaohs. Our tour guides told us that Egypt is one of the first countries to practice a religion with the concept of an afterlife. No culture before or since has paid as much attention to preparations for what was to come after death. Both royalty and the general population built, decorated, and furnished tombs, which the ancient Egyptians understood to represent their external existence. As an artist, I always want to create timeless art. And whenever I looked at the pyramids I felt this was proof of an artist's or architect's eternity. The Valley of the Kings held an energy of powerful legacy, with underground burial chambers filled with many remnants that survived the effects of time and attacks of the barbarians. My European friend Ronnie and myself anxiously led the group, as we were the first to walk into this cave that had all the symbols and hieroglyphics in color. It was easy to imagine the place in its glory, with gold and precious metals surrounding the place like a lavish mansion. But a lot of the other temples were like mummies. All one sees is the skeleton, the outer layer, or what used to be before the valuables were taken from the dead. As we kept walking toward the end of the cave, there were three tombs. After I passed the first tomb, the smile wipes off my face as I got the vibe to be respectful. As I walked closer to Ramsey's casket, I was urged to come closer toward his spirit, as if one just got the news it was a homicide down the street. As I leaned in and put my hand next to the symbols by his casket, a powerful energy swept over me. It was a divine presence that I felt substantially overpowered my own aura, to the point I was extremely humbled, like staring God in the face and disturbing what is supposed to be disturbed. I moved back, putting my hands in the prayerful pose, as if non-verbally apologizing for waking up a grizzly bear from a nap. Ronnie murmured, I feel this wave of unconditional love. I exclaimed, I'm glad that's what you feel, because I'm sure exactly what I'm feeling at this moment. With my hands in the prayerful pose, I continued to give gratitude for life and say thank you for literally anything that came into my mind. As I moved back away from the tomb of Ramses, this powerful voice came into my head and communicated a message. The voice said in a solemn, deep, powerful tone, they took everything from us. As this message came through, I began weeping uncontrollably and began to think of my father who died of leukemia, my uncle who died of heart failure, my brother who was murdered on Crenshaw, my uncle Ed who died of cancer, Muhammad Ali, and other inspirational figures in my life, as I viewed Kings with a purpose. I did my best to hold back the tears, but I could not contain the emotions. I never cried at the funerals, and I was getting a cessation to just let out all the tears I never cried. I released whatever blockages I had inside me. An older lady from our group put her arm around me and asked, what it was that happened? And I replied, I got no words for this, and began to walk out of the cave towards the light. While walking to the light, that strong, solemn voice came back to me and said, so what will you do about it? I hurried along outside to where I held myself, chanting over and over again, self-love, self-love, self-love. Now, self-love to me is the ability to totally trust and value your inner self. This means you must be aware of your likings and dislikings, tendencies, desires, and needs. We must attend to our being with a lot of vigilance. This, I feel, is how you express love to yourself. It is much deeper than pampering or taking yourself to a concert. To demonstrate self-love the best, I learned to pay attention to when I am violating my own energy by being somewhere that I know is no longer serving me. I must know when I am compromising or putting my body under tremendous stress to truly do things I do not want to do. It requires an immense amount of self-honesty. To gain the highest self-love, one must first have enough courage to be honest with the world around you, and everyone included. While walking to the Valley of the Queens, I could not get "they took everything from us" out of my head. Who are they? What is everything that got taken? Why am I connecting or hearing voices with them? I was confused with so many questions. I didn't even have the words to ask. So many thoughts ran through my head. Are we all the same? Why is there even an us versus them? A A lot of white people love black folks more than we love ourselves. Even my own girlfriend is Norwegian and she has more respect for black culture than some of the black women I've dated. I'm not even full African. I don't even know if skin color or race has anything to do with it. Our bus passed by some kids on the way back to the hotel and they gave me the physical gesture of hunger. While the kid put his hand of imaginary food into his mouth, I looked away as I didn't want to lose my comfortable position on the bus. While my group made a restroom break, the kids continued to look at us out the window with the saddest "feed me" eyes. And the voice in my head said, "If you don't look after the little homies, who else is gonna do it?" So I acted on that voice, got up, and the money I was gonna spend at the bazaar to buy random gifts and impress my female friends in the States, I spent on being Oprah in the hood and giving every kid that ran up to me $1. It started with a small group of five, but after their excitement grew, more groups came from out of nowhere, and before I knew it, my cash was gone. They were so excited, and their excitement made me excited. They really felt the value of that dollar, and I could tell they appreciated it more than some of the homies on Skid Row back home. I walked back to the bus, and other members came down to take pictures with the kids. It was not my intention to take pictures or exploit them in any kind of way. Rather, just show them that Americans be cool too, and not everyone wants to take everything from you. I was feeling like, hopefully, I would heal the hatred for Americans inside of an Egyptian kid, assuming that kid was already filled with animosity with plans of one day joining a terrorist group. Yet, I learned a lesson that giving does not always turn out how you want or expect, and one must give from a place of love and expect nothing in return.